This is The First Years, a podcast about the unicorns of American agriculture, first-generation farmers, and the guts, grit, determination, and business prowess required to be one. Today on the podcast, we have Andrew Hartshorn, and Andrew is a farmer from Hamburg, Arkansas. He started farming when he was 23 and decided that he did not want to return to his family's business. So 13 years ago, he left that and started farming. And today he farms just over 3,300 acres, mostly corn, soybeans, rice, and winter oats. Andrew, tell me what it was like when you were growing up. So I understand that you grew up in a funeral home business, that your family had a funeral home business. What is that like as a kid?
Nothing like anything else, I'm sure. Yeah, my dad owned a local funeral home in town, and so we grew up around that, working at the funeral home during the summers, you know, pretty much all through junior high and high school. And I have an older brother and a younger sister. My older brother decided early on that that's not what he wanted to do, and knew my little sister was going to find other things to do, so I just kind of thought that's what I was supposed to do. And so I graduated high school and went to mortuary school for about a year and a half, 2 years, and didn't quite get finished. Decided to move home and move back home for a little while and work for my dad still for another few months. And then finally just decided that that wasn't for me, and kind of bounced around doing different things here and there for a little bit, and then
so you just
stumbled upon.
So you just you just felt pressured that that was what you were supposed to do, because nobody else had done it. So that's why you decided to go to mortician school, or did you have a genuine interest in that?
I think I had a genuine interest in that. I mean, that's all I really knew, and I wasn't ever pressured by my dad or anything. But it was just kind of, it was the easy thing. You know what I mean? Just to kind of, my dad had already done all the hard work, and it was just something that I could just fall into more or less. But once I really got to doing it on a daily basis and really saw what, you know, it was all about, kind of just decided that that's not what I wanted for myself and for my family. And so just searched other avenues.
So then you left mortician school early and you moved back home and you continued working for your dad. I mean, probably just like trying to figure life out, right? Because at that point, you're early 20s, 21, 22.
Yeah. And, you know, I think I moved to Dallas whenever I was like 19 or something. I got out of high school and worked for dad for about 6 months and then went to mortuary school. And, I liked it, you know, in Dallas. I worked for some, like, two or three very big funeral homes and got to see a lot and got to experience a lot. And that was nice. It was just, you know, just kind of being away from home for the first time and just, I don't know, just really found myself wanting to come back, you know, wanting to get out of that big city. And so whenever I moved back home, you know, still not knowing what I wanted to do, you know, I come back home with the idea and the purpose to go back to school and to finish it, because I didn't lack much at all, but just kind of needed to come home for a little bit. And like any guy in his 20s, you know, I was kind of, you know, not wild by any means, but kind of, you know,
for sowing lack of a your better oats term, is what you were, you know, doing,
having a good time.
Yes.
Do what?
I understand. I said sowing your oats. That's what you were doing.
Yeah, that's what I was trying. That's the phrase I was trying to come up with. So I'm out.
Yeah. So then, and did you know your wife then, or did you meet her at mortuary school?
No, I did. We're actually from the same town, and she's 7 years older than me, and so we really didn't run around with the same group of people. And I knew who her dad was, and I mean, the town we live in is 3,000 people. Everybody knows everybody. You know, you may not have been formally introduced, but you know who they are and what they look like. And so we had a mutual friend, actually a cousin of hers that was a good buddy of mine, and he kind of after I'd moved back to Dallas and I was just kind of hanging out and working for Dad, I actually met her through him, and he introduced us, and we started hanging out and dating, and, you know, you could kind of tell that it was going to go somewhere, and so I was working for my dad while we first started dating, and then all of a sudden, I just kind of said, you know, I'm quitting my job, and I'm going to go find something else to do, and so I had her from, you know, she's been with me through the whole transition period, and has been a great help for sure.
And your wife, your wife Amy was your introduction to farming, right? Because her dad's a farmer?
That's right. That's right. Her dad farmed since he was probably 15. I think there was a year or two he didn't farm because he got drafted to in the military. But he grew up in it, and you know, and so whenever I started dating her and gotten to kind of hang out with him, I could kind of see the lifestyle that he lived, you know, being off during the winter times, working during the summer, and kind of having, you know, not necessarily, he wasn't able to always do what he wanted to do because of work, but he could kind of plan every day the way he wanted it to go, and found that very interesting, and just kind of looked up to him and wanted, kind of wanted that for myself. Didn't really know that farming was the avenue at the time, but just was really attracted to that whole part of being outside every day and the kind of lifestyle that he lived. But
and what a change from the example that you had in your dad, you know, because your dad was inside all the time and probably had to work when he had to work, whereas Amy's dad, you know, that is a drastic difference.
Oh yeah, yeah. Dad was the only funeral director and an embalmer on staff, and so he was on call 24/7, you know, no matter what, no matter where we were, if the phone rang, he dropped everything and took off running. And being a part of that and being at so many ball games and birthday parties and just, you know, any kind of, you know, event, and having to leave at the drop of the hat, you know, eventually that just kind of, you know, that was one of my big turning points, was whenever I realized that I didn't want that kind of lifestyle. And then on the other hand, I was going over to, you know, hanging out with Amy and her parents and seeing how, you know, when he went to bed, he closed his eyes and went to bed, and he wasn't worried about anybody calling him in the middle of the night and him having to go to work. And so that was, I guess that was a big part of it, or, you know, one of the things that sure enough played into the equation. But he, so hanging out with Amy and hanging out with her father and dating, and then eventually quit working for my dad, I moved off and worked for a roofing company for a little while. And finally had an opportunity to come back. There was a family in town that owned a business and offered me a job with them, and they kind of took me in and put me to work so I could stay home. And while this was going on and I was working for this family, they owned a flour mill. And in the evenings, whenever I'd get off, I'd come, and if Mr. Phillip was around the shop, my father-in-law, I would get with him, and, you know, he'd put me on a tractor plowing, or I just a little bit here and there. Nothing just like every weekend, but just, you know, every time we crossed paths and I wasn't at work, I'd kind of hang out with him and do stuff. And eventually, me and Amy got engaged, and about the between the engagement or the time of our engagement, I just kind of was revisiting with him at his shop one evening. I said, if there was ever opportunity I could get into farming, I said, you know, if I could work for you, if you ever need any help full time, I said, I'd be willing to, you know, come out here. And at the time, it was him and his brother had a partnership, and they had another guy working for him. And just so happens that like a month or two, well, I guess about 3 months after me and my wife got married, a neighbor had turned back some ground. And so some ground had come available. My father-in-law called me and he said, hey, he said, would you and actually his great nephew that was working for him at the time, he said, would you and Derek like to form a partnership and start farming? And I said, yeah, you know, I said, of course. I mean, I didn't know any different. You know what I mean? All I knew is I just wanted to kind of be outside, and I didn't want to be at the funeral home. I didn't want to be in the floor mill. You know, there wasn't very many options for me out there. And so I said, yeah, you know, I mean, he had made a a whole life out of it, you know. And he was, you know, a few years from retirement, but not quite ready to retire then. And so I jumped on the opportunity and formed a partnership with this guy that, you know, I knew wasn't real close to. And we farmed, we bought a little bit of equipment together, and we leased most of my father-in-law, or all of my father-in-law's equipment from him. And then we just kind of shared the labor. You know, we didn't, he didn't cut us a check every week, but we woke up, met at the shop, and he told us, you know, kind of what we were going to do. And some days we'd work on our farm, and some days we'd work on his. And we just kind of did that for a couple years. And then the other, my partner decided he wanted to, you know, we'd go in separate directions. And so then it was just me. And so I brought in my wife, you know, into the farm. And that was, that would have been our third year farming. And we, my father-in-law had some changes on his farm. It was just him and his brother. And then his brother retired. So it was just him and me. And then together we hired a guy that, and kind of, you know, we were still, all the labor and all the equipment were still kind of all bundled up, you know, but it was good because I didn't have a clue what I was doing. So I had his guiding hand and, you know, kind of his direction. And if there's one thing I learned, I worked with Mr. Phillips side by side for 4 years. And if there's one thing I learned was just hard work, you know, no matter how hard it gets, no matter what happens, just get up and go to work, you know, and eventually it's going to be okay. So we did a lot of get up and go to work. we worked 7 days a week, daylight till dark, all spring, all summer, all fall. And now once the work was done, you know, we got to go deer hunting and do some other things. But that man, he could plug all day at something and it not bother him a bit and get up and do it again the next. And so I had, you know, my dad had great work, or has great work ethic. My father-in-law had great work ethic. And through them, man, you ain't got no choice. You hang out with people like that, you know, get up and go to work and keep hammering on it till something happens. So that was the basis for everything that we've done since then on our farm. When we first started out, I was farming 700 acres. We farmed for 4 years with my, you know, side by side with my father-in-law. I had a bad rice crop that fourth year, and I was going in the hole about 60 grand. And I looked at my father-in-law and I said, "I'm done." I said, "I quit." I said, "I can't."
You wanted to quit?
Oh, I did. I quit that day. I called.
But then I read
advisor.
That.
Yeah,
I read that you had.
I quit for like a day.
Okay, because I read that you have a fear of failure, which I think is probably one of the keys to your success. So I was confused by you saying that you just threw up your hands and quit.
Yeah, I was. I had had a load of rice that day get rejected from the dryer because of the milling, and it was just, you know, the writing was on the wall. You know, I could tell that was going to be the first year that I had went, you know, in the red. And did not want to, you know, to do that by any means. And so I've got a financial advisor that I've used since day one, super good guy. And I called him and I said, I mean, I'm standing in the field. And I said, "I'm done." I said, "Can you get me out of this?" And, we kind of knew where we were going to sit that year at the end. And he said, "Yeah." He said, "We'll take that, you know, that $60,000 note if you're really done." And he said, "We'll scatter it out and, you know, make it, you know, put it on a 5-year term or 10-year term, whatever we need to do." And and I said, "Okay." I said, "Well, that's what we're going to do." So I'd actually told my father-in-law, I said, "You pick out which ground you want." And I said, "I'm going to call another friend of mine that had gotten out of farming, was kind of getting back into it, and he was looking for some acreage." And I made the phone call that night. I said, "I'm done." I said, you can have it. And he said, "Are you sure?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "I'm telling you," I said, "I'm fixing to go work on the pipeline. I'm fixing to go find something else to do." And so my wife gets home that evening, which is pregnant at the time, and we just bought a house, and I'm telling her that I'm fixing to quit my job.
There's no pressure or anything at home.
No. So she, you know, she freaked out a little bit. You know, she didn't want me going off to work, and because, you know, we live in Southeast Arkansas, there's not a whole lot of just job opportunity jumping out at every corner. And so we go to, the next day we go back to work, and we're cutting rice, and we had, I don't know, it must have rained or something. We had went to town for lunch, me and a good friend of mine that was working for us at the time. And we were sitting at in the cafe, and there was another farmer sitting behind me, and he said, "Well, how's it going?" I said, "Terrible." He said, "Mine too." He said, "My rice crop was millions off." He said, "Everything's," he said, "I'm doing." I said, "Are you really?" And this guy farmed like 2,000 acres on the other side of town. And he said, "I'm doing." I said, "Well, I'm not." I said, "Give me your landlord's number." And so he gave me his landlord's number, and I called them that night. And there was actually another family that farmed next to me at the time or around me. They had approached them about farming their ground, and so I had to sit and wait for like 3 days for those guys to turn it down. But my thinking was, okay, this is the deal. There's not anything around here that I'm going to find to do. I want to stay in Hamburg, and so this is it. It's either sink or swim. We pick up this ground. That'll make this debt that we're fixing to roll over look a little better, and we're fixing to just jump out here and go buy all our own equipment and do it all ourselves and step out from underneath my father-in-law's wing and just see what we can make of it. And that's what we did. The landlords called me back. They met with me, and we visited and had a good visit. And it all went, you know, the way it did. And then that winter, I found myself riding around all over the state of Arkansas and Mississippi and North Louisiana looking for equipment and buying equipment. And hired a guy that had never been into farming, and then turned around and hired another guy that had never been into farming. So you've got a guy that farmed for 4 years underneath, another man calling all the shots, and then who hires two people who don't even know really how to run a tractor at all. But we did it. We made a crop that year. The yields were not good, but the market was where it needed to be, and paid off at 60 grand and made some money to boot that year. And ever since then, we've grown, and we're doing good. We're hammering on it. I've got a great group of guys now that's working for me. I've had one guy that's been with me for 6 years, and he is the right hand man. There's no doubt, no question. And I've got another good group of guys. They're young, and they're all interested in farming, and they like doing it. And here we are. Now we're farming 3,300 acres. I've purchased almost about 300 acres of my own ground since then. And we are actually looking right now into starting our own cattle operation. So that's a lot different path, but another avenue we're very interested in taking. So that's pretty much, I guess, the story about 10 minutes or 5 minutes of how I've kind of got to where I am.
Do you ever look back, Andrew, and think like, what if I hadn't taken Mr. Phillips' advice and I just didn't just get up and go to work the next day after you decided you were going to quit? Because, I mean, then maybe you wouldn't have gone to lunch, and then maybe you wouldn't have found out about that other land. Do you ever think about that?
Yeah. No, I don't want to think about that. I kind of like where I'm at right now.
The other thing that I read that I want you to speak to just a little bit, Andrew, is that you walked away from 700 acres in 2015. And can you talk just a little bit about, something that my husband and I talk about in regards to our farm a lot, is that sometimes it takes more courage to stay the same than to grow. Can you talk about that decision and what led you to that decision, and whether or not you think, it was the right move at the time?
Yeah, I can tell you definitely, as of right now, it was the right move. Now, I'd love for that 700 acres to come up next year, but it, every decision I made on the farm, like from the time Mr. Phillip, said, "Hey, here's a partnership you can get into, you can get some land to yourself," and from the time I sat in the cafe and talked to the guy about the 2,000 acres, there was never any doubt. There was no questioning. There was no, it was just, that's what I was supposed to do. And the 700 acres came up, and we had just picked up previously to that 1,300 acres, and the year prior to that. And the farm had just kind of made a pretty good jump. And then the 700 come up, which was right across the road. I mean, you couldn't ask for anything. I mean, it was perfect. We had land butting up next to it, and it was a no-brainer, you know, really. But I just couldn't sleep at night thinking about it. You know, it just didn't, nothing felt right. Number one, I didn't feel like I was ready for that much. And number two, I mean, I didn't feel it, you know, in my heart. I didn't feel like that's the way, you know, God wanted us to go at the time. And, which was great, because that year, it was terrible. I mean, you know, that would have put me under, you know what I mean? That would have done me in. So, yeah, growth is always good. I always look for places to grow. You know, I would love to pick up another, you know, 800, 1,000 acres, as long as it was, you know, some great ground. You know, this cattle deal we're working on, you know, that's going to be growth. It's going to be a slower growth, you know, because we're going to start small and have to build and all this kind of stuff. But growth is always good. But, man, if you're not at peace with it, if you're not at peace with anything, you don't need to do it, you know. And I did not have that peace. And turned out that year, it was, like I said, it was a great decision. This year I would take it, but then, yeah. it just wasn't right for us. And so that's kind of how that all played out.
The other thing that I read, Andrew, that I think is good advice for any farmer, but particularly for young farmers and farmers that are just starting out, is that you really focus on the nexus between yield, and you really have dialed in what you have to make in order to, I read a quote from you that said, you know, if I make 100, I think you said 100 bushel corn and 50 bushel soybeans, they won't come take my house.
Yeah, is that? Yeah, 200 bushel corn and 50 bushel soybeans. Yeah, and that's still the premise for this year too. That the financial advisor that I spoke of earlier, we meet with him once a month. We sit down and we go over everything. And that is a great tool, because a young guy like me, you know, not being around farming and growing up, you know, when you get that crop loan, you've got a chunk of money at your disposal, you know. And so with him, he was just kind of, just that way to check myself and make sure my money was going where it needed to. And still to this day, I mean, we still, you know, I'll call him if there's anything questionable or if there's a big purchase that I need to make, I run it by him, and he, you know, he knows what my cash flow is and he knows what my checkbook looks like, and we're able to go through it. And so when we meet, you know, like we'll start planning this in October or September for the next year. And we'll start looking at prices and, you know, we'll look at, you know, the term debt and everything else. And we'll sit down and we'll figure up exactly, you know, this is the price I need for beans and this is the price I need for corn. And going off my 3-year average, this is what I should cut, you know. And so we base that price on that. And then, and I hold to it. I do not, I may leave, I tell you what, out of 250,000 bushels of corn that I should book for this year, I booked all of it except for, I think 50,000 bushels or something like that. And then, and on my beans, I've booked all my beans, but like 10,000 bushels. And so I book heavy, and I don't wait. Once it hits that mark, once it hits that $10 mark, and I can get $10 to me at the dryer, I book it right then and there. And some people, you know, playing it safe or whatever, I think it's playing it smart, you know. I'd much rather be here 15 years from now than I had make an extra, you know, $50,000-$60,000 this year. So
right.
That's the way I look at it.
So I'm guessing that when you started your farming business, you got a little bit of like pushback or doubt. I remember when my husband and I have a sheep dairy, and when we went to get insurance on our sheep, the insurance broker said, "You can't milk a sheep. I can't sell you insurance." ours is a little bit more of a drastic example because, you know, you're a grain farmer, so that's more commonly known. But I'm sure that you got some pushback. And I read which I think is a hilarious quote from a banker that told you that you've gone from digging other people's graves to digging your own. Can you just share like how you pushed through that doubt and you know other people casting their visions on you of you not succeeding?
Yeah, just ignorance. I was just ignorant to the fact. You know what I mean? I mean, I would. You know, I just, you know, I kind of just saw this one thing, and that's what I wanted. And you know, I mean, what else? What were my other choices? You know, what I'm trying to say is it was. This was the only avenue at the time that I could have to make a living for the rest of my life. You know, that I could see right there in front of me, and so I just kind of jumped on that. And but yeah, I mean, I know. I mean, I've had people tell me, "Man, we thought you were the biggest idiot. You know, we didn't think you'd do this, and you know, we didn't think you'd make it this long." You know, and I haven't made it yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whenever I'm getting ready to retire, and I've got one son that's 7 years old, and if he wants to farm, that's great, and if he doesn't, that's fine too. But whenever I'm selling my equipment, or whenever he's signing the paper, I'm signing the papers over to him, or whatever happens, you know, that's whenever I've made it. You know, until then, I haven't made anything. There's been a lot of good guys not make it to the end, you know. And so, and I want to be one of those guys that makes it to the end. That's my overall goal. Whenever I first started, I wanted to make it to, you know, at least wanted to farm till I was 35. Well, I turned 35 this summer. So my new goal is I want to farm till I get ready to retire. And so hopefully there'll be a retirement at the end of this thing. But anyhow, there was people that would, you know, say kind of some comments and all that. But we farm. We're right here next to the Mississippi Delta, and if anybody knows Delta farmers, we're a little different than the rest of the world. You know, there's not too many part-time farmers where we live. You're either in it or you're not. And and now the way everything's changing, there's a lot of you know, a lot of bigger farms popping up, and you know, in our area, there's nobody that I know that farms like less than 1,500 acres, and so. I mean, it's go and blow and all, you know, all during the summer. And it's just a different kind of mindset these guys have. And you've got those guys that, you know, them big rollers that come in and buy new trucks every year and, you know, always, you know, flashing their money around. And then you've got other guys that just seem like they never have any money. So some of those guys that flash that money around, you know, they kind of, in the rest of the community, people that don't farm, they just kind of, you know, they got a mindset of what a farmer is, you know, a guy that drives a new big truck all the time and just, you know, works out of his truck and tells other people what to do. And that could not be furthest from the truth, which I know there are people that do that and that farm like that. And so I had that stigmatism, you know, people thought that's what I was going to be and that's what I was going to do. And I'm not. I mean, they can, you know, they can come to my farm any day and see that I'm right there with my guys, you know, doing just as much as they are. Sometimes more, try not to, but sometimes more than they are. So there were some comments, you know, people questioning what I was doing.
Yeah, if you could give advice to a young farmer that's just starting out, what would that advice be?
Just get up and go to work. Just get out and do it. I mean, you know, watch your spending, of course, watch your money, because that's where, you know, that's where a lot of good guys get in trouble. Because, man, you got to be a mechanic, you got to be an agronomist, you got to be, you know, a tractor driver, you got to be a big truck driver, you got to be a banker, you got to be a marketer, you know, you got a lot on your plate, so you just got to go plug at it, you know, you just got to go to work every day and get something done. And that, like, you know, that goes back to my father and my father-in-law, you know, that's what I watched them do, and so that's what I try to do, is just get up and go to work.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's solid advice for sure. Andrew, this is a question that I'm going to ask every podcast guest. So to what would you credit your success this far? Do you think it's skill or luck or a combination of both maybe?
My wife, I don't know. my parents. You know, I'm blessed with some good praying parents. So that helps out a lot, you know, especially dealing with Mother Nature and the weather. And I've got a 7-year-old that, you know, he's not gonna have the nicer things in life unless I give it to him. And so that's a good drive, you know. And my wife, her growing up in a farming family makes my life a lot easier. I don't get those phone calls at 8 o'clock at night. Well, when are you coming home? You know, you were out at 8 o'clock last night, and I don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. And so, definitely my wife and my family, and my godly parents, and you know, my upbringing, and also just, you know, the older guys in the community. You know, the older guys that have been farming their whole life. You know, my father-in-law, and there's a couple of 3 or 4 other guys that, I mean, I'll still call them today and be like, hey, what do you think about this? You know, and run it by them. And they've always, you know, been there for me. I've had them quit what they were doing and come by my farm and see what's going on. And, you know, and so I guess a lot of little things, you know, if I can't just put my finger on necessarily one thing.
I'm so glad you made time to join us, Andrew. You are a great example of the sheer will and determination it takes to start a farm. That concludes this episode of the First Years Podcast. Until next time, have a great week.